Welcome back. You're here with Dave and Faisal on 770 CHQR and More Than Money. Faisal, we've got a terrific guest joining us shortly here, but this, you know, it's been a very volatile year. It's been a good year for equities. Yep. There's tons of headline
even
noise.
Some fixed income has done well too.
Has done well. That's right. But it often doesn't jive with what people feel, right? Or what they're reading in the headlines.
Yep.
and the fear that you know, the headlines and the constant communication that we're seeing as investors are getting. So we've invited Benny Tall, who's the Deputy Chief Economist, CIBC World Markets, back to join us, as he typically does on a quarterly basis, to try to help us make some sense of what's going on and what we might expect to see into the future. Benny, welcome to the show.
Thank you. A pleasure.
Well, where do we start? Why don't we start, Benny, if we can, just getting your thoughts on a bit of a recap as to where we, you know, how we got to here today for this year. What did we start this year with? Like, what were your expectations, and how do we get to where we are today?
Yes. First of all, as you know, I can give you a brilliant economic analysis here. One tweet will change everything, so we have to keep this in mind. However, I think that 2019 turned out to be a relatively okay year. It started very, very weak. The fourth quarter of last year and the first quarter was basically zero growth in Canada, and then we had kind of a rebound. So really, we got a very strong second quarter, third quarter kind of going back to where we belong. Overall, we are in a neighborhood of 2.2% for the year as a whole, which is a bit more than a potential given the rebound after a very weak first quarter. So it was a lot of volatility. There is no question about the fact that the dispute between the U.S. and China over trade is impacting Canada in a negative way, because our consumer is doing fine. Even the housing market is starting to improve, especially in places like Ontario. But investment, exports are not there, because this fog of uncertainty is really making this decision to invest very, very difficult, and making it much more difficult for the economy to break the 2% threshold.
What surprised you this year? What were the things that caught you off guard or caught you by surprise?
Well, there are thousands of them, but I think that the number one factor, which I think is very important, is the way Trump is attacking the central bank. Mm-hmm. I've never seen anything like that before. You know, in Economics 101, they teach you, you know, the independence of central banking is a taboo. You don't touch it, because the minute a central bank independence is being compromised, the whole system cannot function.
Yeah.
And Trump is calling them boneheads. Trump is basically telling that they are the enemy, putting a lot of pressure on the Fed to cut interest rates. I was not surprised by the fact that the Fed cut interest rates. That was our forecast. We believed that the Fed will go ahead with what we call a mid-cycle easing, and that's exactly what happened. But the attack on the central bank, even from Trump, I'm surprised.
So you use the phrase mid-cycle, and we get a lot of conversation and questions about that, because we see that sometimes in the press, and investors are thinking, you know, are we mid-cycle on this? Or there's lots of that discussion of the R word, the recession word. Are we getting closer to recession? Can you give us a sense of what the economic data is telling us over the course of the year, and maybe a little bit of insight as to what you see for the rest of this year?
Okay. So first of all, let's put this mid-cycle easing in perspective. You know, we're all familiar with the notion of the yield curve, a situation in which, you know, the difference between long-term interest rates and short-term interest rates, and sometimes long-term interest rates are actually lower than short-term interest rates. And whenever we had this kind of situation, usually we have a recession. And that's why people are so concerned about the recession. That's why the media is all over it, because the yield curve is almost inverted now, signaling a recession. However, if you go back in history, there are two episodes, in 1995 and 1998, in which the yield was inverted, but there was no recession after. The question is why? Because in both cases, the Fed started to cut interest rates. That was the mid-cycle easing. And when they cut interest rates on time, early enough, they were able to postpone and even prevent a recession. So the key question is, to what extent the easing done by the Fed now, currently, is a mid-cycle easing, or maybe just an easing because there is a really bad economy. I believe, looking at the data, is that we are in the midst of a mid-cycle easing that actually might save 2020. 2020 will not be a good year. It will be a weak year. But there will be some factors that will lift the economy in 2020. One is the Fed cutting. The other is fiscal stimulus coming from Trump in 2020. He just got the green light to do so. And the third, and very important, is the last-minute deal with China that will lift the market. It will not be a real deal. It will not be a comprehensive deal, but it will be enough to get things going. So there is some logic to this madness. I think it's very important to really understand. You know, we economists, we predict. And when there is fog, when there's uncertainty, we try to buy time and say, when the fog clears, we'll see. One morning I woke up and I realized this fog is not going to clear. The fog will not clear because the fog is the ultimate goal. The fog is not a mean to achieve anything. It is the ultimate goal. Rightly or wrongly, Trump believes that if everybody is confused, investment will go to the U.S. because that's the default. So as long as he can confuse the market and keep this fog on, I think he will do it. Because you achieve three things. One, you achieve the Fed cutting this because of this fog, the Fed is cutting. That's exactly what Trump would like to see. Two is that because of the uncertainty, Trump now has the green light to spend fiscally. He's going to do so. And in the last minute, just in time for the 2020 elections, there will be a deal with China. Everything is planned. There is logic to this madness.
And so with what you've just said, how does that impact Canada for 2020?
Well, since 1951, whenever they had a recession, we had a recession. So if those three forces can lift the economy and save it from a recession in the U.S., it will save us from a recession. So what's happening in the U.S. will have a significant impact on Canada. Also, to the extent that the trade dispute with China will be resolved, and again, I don't think it will be resolved in any real way, but you know, on a temporary basis, the way they did with NAFTA, because NAFTA 2 is basically like NAFTA 1, yeah? No mm-hmm. big change. Yeah. But they will do enough to lift sentiment in the market and even investment. That will be positive for Canada. Because I don't see any scenario in which the trade dispute between the U.S. and China is actually hurting us, is actually helping us. So clearly that's not the case. We are being damaged by that. Business investment is not there, so we need it to be resolved. So those three forces will help Canada as much as it's helping the U.S.
Benny, we have less than 2 minutes to go. We are heading into a Canadian election. Out of all the platforms that we've seen so far, which is the best for the Canadian economy?
Well, I cannot answer that because that's too tricky. What I suggest is that there are many aspects to all platforms to help the Canadian economy. Without getting specifics, the only thing we need to do that we have to focus on is not dividing the pie, but finding a way to make this pie larger. Mm-hmm. What I mean by that, we don't need more tax cuts or not even increase taxes. What we need is a significant investment in productivity enhancing vehicles. That's not happening, and we need it because that's the only solution to the slow economic growth that we are witnessing.
Really quickly, give us one example that whichever government turns into power can do to increase that productivity.
Much more capital to startups, that's one thing. Really, we have to shy away from hating risk. We have to love risk. We have to basically allow risk to exist. Allow people to fail because that's the only way to increase productivity and raise our output. Number two, change the way we think about education. We have to look at practical education, relevant education, making sure that we don't have a situation which we have too many PhDs that cannot really be employed in today's labor market.
Okay. Let's leave it there for this segment. Benny, I'd like you to stick around for us in the next segment because we've got lots of questions from people about what is the impact of negative interest rates? So if you're interested in that, stick around after the break. But before we go to break, Faisal, we've got our upcoming seminar.
Yeah, see, these are some of the conversations we're going to have at our next seminar talking about how this will impact your retirement in the future. That will be on Tuesday, October 22nd, 7 p.m. at the Carriage House Inn. You need to reserve your seat. So give us a call, 966-8400. That's 966-8400. Or you can register online at morethanmoneyradio.com.
All right, you're on 770 CHQR. Join us after the break.